Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We have a special show for you today, and sitting across from me
is the beloved co-host. That's right. And this Mike Cosentino here, and we have Chuck McCandy with us, and you're going to hear his voice in a second. We got we're billing this show as the family fight. Not a food fight. This is a family fight. This is not the Chilla in Manila. This is the Moner in Sedona here, ladies and gentlemen. We believe that we are representative. This is kind of a different show for Democratic perspective.
Because we don't have to be nice on this show. We've got a live conservative in here.
We have a live conservative around that walked into the studio. And yes, Chuck is family. And we believe that we represent a lot of American families in that we have a broad range of political opinions. And unlike some families that avoid these topics, we don't avoid them. We go straight for them.
How come I feel like a Christian walking into the Coliseum?
That's right.
I've been telling people it's Mike and his demented relative show.
And Chuck said,
and I said, I'm not a relative.
That's right. I resent that. Yeah. So we are kind of, the truth is, I suppose the truth is Chuck has been around my family so long. He is family. But truly, bloodlines, we are not related other than, you know, in the deep recesses of the Italian countryside, you know.
You're both from the same town in New York.
Close enough. Close. Villa Rosa and Valedolmo. Yeah. In Sicily.
Yeah. And you've known each other since you were kids, or?
Since before we were kids.
Before you were kids.
So. Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember a day in my life where I haven't known Mike.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if that's a plus or a minus.
I think that's kind of a toss up, but,
So we did, go ahead.
But where are you guys originally from? Just tell people.
Chuck is from Western New York. He lives in the Buffalo area.
Uh-huh.
We all lived in the city at one time, but like a lot of people, he left the city. Mm-hmm. And when I left it, I went far, far away, and he just went to the suburbs. But
and you went to the Army.
And I went to the Air Force, yeah.
Yeah, Air Force.
Yeah, we try to make a difference between, I was in both the Army
and
the Air Force.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I apologize.
We'll have a whole show on my military background someday.
Okay, what are we going to discuss today?
We think we're going to, like I said, like a lot of families, we disagree on things on the right and left. But one of the things that we do agree on is that both sides use fear as a tool, and both sides use immigration as a tool to fuel that fear. And so we have. I have a special. I think I have a certain view of immigration from a Southwest, from an Arizona perspective. And Chuck, Mr. Chuck McCanny here, has a view from maybe a non-Southwest perspective. So tell me, Chuck, we'll get, you know, because it's really easy for us to dominate the microphone and never let you speak, by the way, except to make fun of you. But seriously, what...
There's a hand signal that we can give Tom. He turns off your mic, too.
Yeah, he cuts it off. But I don't know. Characterizes in any way you want. Conservative position on immigration.
Well, first off, we do have a problem with immigration in this country. Sure, we need immigration, but it's got to be somewhat or somehow controlled. You just can't have a border that's open, because then a country loses its ability to govern itself. If you just have a border where anybody can walk across at any time.
Well, some of us feel like simply because we are not, anti-immigration, that we are pro-open border. That's certainly what the conservatives will, as soon as you don't speak against certain reforms in immigration, then all of a sudden you become an open border advocate. You know, like, oh, you want to do away with all, you know, national boundaries.
Borders. No. And there are a few people who want to. In fact, I think someday we should get some of them on the show and let them give their point of view.
That's a good idea.
Because I sort of agree with you, Chuck, if you don't have borders, it's hard to have a nation state. If you don't have, in fact, is the whole thing is made up, the whole world is made up of these borders that define nation states. The problem is that if you're a super wealthy guy, you can go anywhere and do anything and immigrate almost anywhere if you got enough cash on you. If you're poor, your ability to move is much more limited.
Definitely so. And I do believe that this country has to address the problem of immigration as far as the time it takes for some people to do it legally. It's absolutely absurd. The time that it takes a party to go through the channels legally.
So that should be part of an immigration reform package.
Definitely. And some people don't believe that.
Get your buddies in the GOP and the Congress to vote for immigration reform.
Definitely so. I mean, it has to be reformed. And it's nothing that can be done overnight. It's got to be well thought out so that you don't make any mistakes on it. Mistakes are going to be made, but try to minimize the mistakes of reform.
Don't forget, some of us feel like, and as far as my Southwest position and my Arizona position on immigration, is that with a change of rules. Now, you know, I pointed out to you that as a gentleman of Italian descent, they had lots of reasons for deporting Italians, but they never did. Unless, you know.
Some of them.
Well, that's true.
Lucky
some
Luciano, he was deported. But, you know, it's only, you know, here and there.
Yeah, here and there. But so we're not a nation that, is built itself on deporting people. And what I mean by the change of rules is, you know, Reagan has amnesty. He realizes the point, you know, that we need to legalize those people that are here. We wanted them to come. We invited them to come. We wanted the agricultural part. We wanted that workforce here, and then we change the rules. All of a sudden, we start closing things down. So for a lot of us, and me included, the people that are here are friends and neighbors. These are people I've lived in Arizona almost 40 years. These are people I've taught, I've worked with, that live near me. So this isn't a remote issue of something that's going on someplace far away.
But I do think he's right. There is a problem with the kind of torture we put legal immigrants with. And I worked with a bunch of legal immigrants when I lived in New York. And they were all becoming citizens, and they liked to torture the rest of us because they were studying their citizenship test with all these questions to ask us Native American whether we knew or not. But it is a very long process, and one of the things that bothered them the most is that they would get married and their wives wouldn't be able to come over for maybe 3 years.
Right.
And you had a bunch of very unhappy guys waiting for their wives who they would get married over in their country, their old country, come here, study. They would, I worked as a bartender and they'd be in the back room studying for the bar backs would be studying for their citizenship test. But their suffering was it is very hard to be a legal immigrant now. And I think that's a good point. I think it's something, let's go on to illegal immigration, but I think it's a point that we need to do something also about the way the legal immigration
way has to be streamlined somehow, where it's not a super highway, but it has to be streamlined and the time involved has to be controlled. It can't be super long and it shouldn't be super short either. There's got to be some kind of a control to have it where it's feasible.
Well, what does the conservative here in the studio think about border security? We have, just to give a little quick background, we have a crap load of people running for Arizona governor on the GOP side. And each one of them has a border security plan that is, seems to be out of la-la land. But maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that's where it'll come from. So what is border security as far as this conservative is concerned?
Well, this conservative is not going to put pillboxes and machine guns mowing them down as they come across the Rio Grande.
All right.
I mean, that's not my idea of border security.
That eliminates one extreme.
Yeah, one extreme. I mean, I'm talking, I'm being...
That's good, though. No,
I mean,
that's...
That's you know, that is, I mean, probably some want to do that, but it's not the answer. I mean, you got to have some integrity to your border. Integrity to the border. You can't have it as just anytime anybody can come across anywhere, because you do open the door for undesirables, drug trafficking to come across under the guise of immigration looking for sanctuary or protection from crime in their own country. So in that respect, it has to be, you have to have some integrity to your border.
Let's go ahead and talk about
that. What about the recent, I'm sorry, Mike, but
we're going
about the recent
immigration
crisis? And for me, it's not really a crisis. There's 312 million of us or something in the United States, and 60,000 kids try to come over here. So whatever you do about it, it's not some sort of huge national crisis. If we can't handle that, I mean, you know, and so I don't, you know, but what do you think about that? I mean, these kids are kind of running from poverty. They're running from the highest murder rate in the world.
They've never been in Detroit, have they?
Well, where they're coming from in Honduras, where they're coming from in Honduras has the highest murder rate in the world.
Yes.
And the town that most of them are disproportionately coming from has the highest murder rate in Honduras.
Yeah.
So
but,
you can imagine it's a kind of scary
don't
place.
Don't you think the governments of those countries have some responsibility to reduce that murder rate in their own country?
Absolutely.
I mean, they have a problem in their country, and their solution is send the kids to our country.
What if Honduras is basically a failed government?
It probably is.
Yeah. What do you think,
probably
Mike?
It really approaches being
a failed government. It's out of control.
This country, though, can't be the solution to every failed country's problems. It just can't be. It's impossible.
One of the liberal perspectives that I like is that this is not an immigration crisis at all. It is a refugee crisis. And until we address it as a refugee crisis, then we really won't find a solution. As long as we're thinking about it as an immigration crisis, then...
It's a mix of the two.
Then
it definitely is a mix of the two.
Well, that's
There's no doubt about it whatsoever. And people who try and compare the immigration now with the immigration of the late 1800s and early 1900s, they're different.
Like I just did.
They're completely different. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there were tens of thousands of unskilled jobs available for the people who came in that could start and they can work. A lot of those jobs aren't here anymore. The steel plants, the auto plants, those jobs are no longer exist in this country. So the situation then and now are completely different. Do we have different problems?
So you're saying they could absorb more people who didn't speak English
and
culture
speaking English. We make it, the government, both Republican and Democrat, have made it so easy for these
non-speakers
to come over here. Well, you don't have to learn the language. All you got to do is press a button on the phone, and we speak your language.
Apparently, you can go to any country in the world and just plug in. It'll say, you know, where's the nearest pizza or something. Yeah.
But you go to the stores. You go to Walmart. They're a great target for everybody. They have it in English and in Spanish. You don't have to speak English. They tell you, don't worry, you don't have to. But try and get a good job not speaking English or not speaking English well or have good communication skills. It's difficult to get that better job.
Let's talk about how both sides use immigration as a fear tactic. Now, this is one of the best fundraisers for conservatives is the immigration issue. They scare the crap out of some people and people write checks like mad.
Both sides of it do.
Now, we all understand. Yeah. I think what we can agree on, whether they should come to the United States or not, the reason these kids are running away from these countries is because the situation is extremely bad. Dire poverty, no potential to do anything, gangs controlling not only the streets, but the schools, big chunks of the government. They're scary places to be. You understand why somebody, we all understand why somebody wanted to get out of that. The question is, they come up here, what do we do about it?
Well, for me, this was a chance for the United States to shine as a to put our ideals into practice. This was a chance to show the world that we're not the jerks that invaded two sovereign countries, for oil. That we would take children in and we would, sort them out. I'll give Chuck his due here, that there should be some sorting involved as who's a refugee, in at least some sense of the word, and who might be an illegal immigrant or an undocumented immigrant in the other sense of the word, that there should be some sorting out of these 57,000, however many there are.
The number has been dropping. The number of people coming over has been dropping. The president got the presidents of all three of the countries where everybody's coming from together and sort of bent their ear with trying to get them to stop them before they leave their countries, try to prevent it.
But the extremism to me was it's one thing we're talking rationally here about children and about refugee versus immigrant. And yet when you have people blocking buses and protesting and yelling terrible, horrible things, that's the part of the extreme. And then you have some of the right-wing media embracing that position is when, the left become, they'll send these things. My email box is full of this, the GOP supports these, crazy protesters, send us money.
Right.
Well, both sides do that. They use the fear either for or against immigrants to raise money. One side is as guilty as the other.
Maybe.
I mean, they're both.
It's like gun rights. If you have no conservative, there's a whole slew of anecdotes about people defending themselves with guns very successfully. If you go over to the other side, if you go to some of the liberal websites, we've talked about this before, suddenly you get all the times where some kid shot his brother, somebody shoots there's some people who should not have a weapon, certainly.
Oh,
out
definitely
there.
So. Yeah.
But so we look at very selective information, I think is what Mike's getting at, or not.
Yes, exactly. But let me get this conservative on record for background checks. If we're going to do guns, let's do guns.
Oh, definitely so.
Well, there you go.
Definitely so.
A reasonable.
I don't think anybody is against background. As a few idiots, maybe, but the majority.
The NRA. What do you mean? Yes, many idiots in this case.
You have to have background checks. You can't have people.
Have you talked to Wayne LaPierre lately?
He hasn't returned my calls.
Okay. But,
the NRA used to be in favor of background checks.
You have to have background checks. You can't have people who are mentally disturbed or deranged running around with pistols and under their belt and stuff like that. You have to have some kind of control that way. The fear is that they go too far, then taking the right to own a gun away from everybody. So that's the extreme fear.
The slippery slope.
The slippery slope type of thing. And there is some degree of credibility to it, but anybody who owns a pistol, like I own pistols, definitely thinks, and anybody who has one should have a background check to, if they have a violent background, if they've committed a felony. How many people are out who have murdered somebody and they're out free? They shouldn't have a gun.
I just want to mention to the audience at home that can't see Chuck speaking with his hands as is a characteristic of his ethnicity. If the pounding you hear is him pounding the desk here, with each point he makes. So I just thought I'd explain
but
that.
But the thing is also with the immigration, what do you do with these children and adults, and not all children, there are some middle-aged or teenage in their 20s and families. What do you do with them when they come over here to make them successful? okay, to make them have that good living or that life that they're looking for, the advantage that they're looking for. First off, it's education. They've
yes.
got to be educated. They have to, I believe, keep their language, keep their speaking of their native language, but they also have to be able to speak English language, understand it, be articulate as possible to get the better paying jobs. It's very difficult if you do not speak English in this country to step above the minimum pay scales. It's
well,
very, very difficult.
So you're advocating that these immigrants be competitive with non-immigrant Americans.
They have to, I mean, not competitive, but they have to be coexist with them compete with for jobs and to be part of the country, keep your traditions, but to be successful here, to make more than the minimum wage.
Yeah.
You have to be educated.
It's well, tough here.
And the minimum wage, I believe, both parties are using as a tool. Minimum wage was never meant to support a family of three or four or five. It was meant as an entry for somebody who is in college, who needs a part-time job while they're going to school. Nobody can survive on, what's the minimum wage in Arizona?
I have no idea.
Nine something. Say $10.
No, it's more, it's
less than 10.
All right, say eight.
It's barely eight.
Say
yeah,
it's $8.
I think it's $7.95.
Yeah.
You cannot raise a family on $8 an hour.
But once again, the liberal position is that if you work for a living, if you work, and don't forget, most minimum wage workers aren't those kids in college workers. They are single moms trying to raise a family. So I like the liberal position. I understand that it may be economically twisted, but if you work for a living, if you work 40 hours a week, you go out there every day. I'm not pounding the desk. Yeah. Then you should make a living wage.
Oh, yes, you should make a living wage. But the
minimum wage is not a living wage.
It's not a living
wage. In this country.
And it was never meant to be. It never should be meant to be a living wage.
I guess that's where we agree. I disagree because I think that minimum wage should provide enough money for somebody to get by on. Maybe not a whole family, but it should really support a person. It should be enough money.
It should keep them off of public assistance.
That they can live on. Yeah. You should. So many of the immigrants come over here. The guys I worked with had engineering degrees and they were barbacks.
Yeah.
You know, when they got here.
Yeah.
It's a tough haul. Their wives would have a master's degree in their country and they would be selling, saris in a sari shop. And, it's a tough road. And so many of the immigrants come over here. Gosh, they're happy to have any kind of job at all. And it's that long leg up, you know, that's really tough to do.
But when you're on, let's say you buy into the political idea that you can live on a minimum wage. I'm saying the Republican and the Democratic, they're both saying this. The minimum wage almost guarantees that you have to have assistance from government.
Right.
Sources.
If you get just the minimum wage.
Just the minimum wage or even a little bit above it. You need help with heat. You need help with rent. You need maybe welfare help or something like that. And it guarantees that you're dependent upon one party or another to live.
I don't know. You're working in a fast food place. And you're working 40 hours a week and then you have a second job and you still can't get by on it. I think the liberal position is that we need to raise the minimum wage.
$10.10 an hour is Obama's.
There's no unions like the old days.
Obama's suggestion.
When I was a union bartender in New York, the unions would negotiate our wages and we got paid very well. And even the people who were in non-union places had to compete with the union wages. That is completely collapsed now. So what do we
almost completely collapsed.
So what do we do to replace that?
So we have union membership when the people in this room were young was somewhere around 40% of the workers in this country, 38-40% of the workers in the country belong to the union. Now it's in single digits. You know, we're talking 8-9% union membership. So, and we've seen a deterioration of workers' rights go along with that. So let's once again ask this conservative, what about reviving those organizations that looked out for workers?
Definitely so. But again, how many unions shot themselves in the foot, demanding, fringe benefits and unrealistic bonuses and extras?
Tell the story about your summer at Bethlehem Steel.
Oh, yeah. I worked one summer in 1969. I was in college, and I worked at Bethlehem Steel one summer. There were days that all I did was sit in a shanty with the union steward and eat cantaloupe. That's all I did all day long. And there were other days out of an eight-hour shift, if I worked 2 hours or an hour and a half, that was it. The rest of the time, you just sat around doing nothing. And you cannot run a business paying somebody 8 hours and only having them work an hour and a half or 2 hours out of that 8 hours.
And what about the auto industry?
Oh, yeah. Right across the street from the Bethlehem Steel in Lackawanna, New York, which is just outside of Buffalo, was a Ford stamping plant. They expanded the Ford stamping plant. The structural steel that they used for the new building was purchased cheaper from France, shipped overseas, and used for their expansion than from Bethlehem Steel that was right across the street. Now, so, when that happens, something is wrong with that company. The company, the management, the union, and the workers were all responsible for the demise of Bethlehem Steel. They all did one thing or another to guarantee that that business was going to go under.
But conservatives did, they were able to blame the unions the most. You're the first conservative I've ever heard say that management shared in the response. And we can, by the way, we can.
Oh, yeah, there are people that blame just the unions.
That's
or
right.
Just the workers.
That's right.
Or just management. But it's a combination of everybody. The management didn't upgrade their processing.
Yeah, I think
using new technology. The unions got unbelievable perks for their people. They were off for 2 months, 3 months, full pay. When they retired, they got full benefits. And the workers were doing less work for more money. That's a recipe for disaster for everything.
But when I went to work for the hotel in New York, and they were just starting up a new hotel, we worked hours and hours and hours without pay. We were under tremendous pressure to not put down how much we were working. So finally, the union had cut a deal with the hotels that they'd give them, I think, 3 months to have a shakeout, get rid of employees they don't like, and so forth and so on. But 3 months passed, and no union. So so we called the union up, and we said, hey, you guys don't come over here. We're going to go to, I think it was Local 6 in New Haven, and ask them to come down here. But what happened then was suddenly we got paid for overtime. Suddenly they didn't make us stay late anymore. We got our, it was a big improvement. It's a big improvement.
Unions,
once the union
I look
came
at
in.
Unions as a necessary evil.
Yeah. Now,
and just the threat
that,
of a union.
This
just
was not one of the most union, distinguished and prestigious unions in the world, and it was in federal receivership for a certain, shall we say, influence from mob sources.
So all we're proving here is that unions are human organizations and subject to human faults. But generally speaking, now everybody in this room is a wage slave. Nobody here is made their living off of capital gains or off of inheritance. You worked for a living. Was your employer always looking out for your best interests?
No.
The other guy, the co-host? No. The idea is that organization.
Become the other guy now, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. You become, well, when I'm at the microphone, you're the other guy.
As far as the business looking out for your best, their best interest is having you work as efficiently and cheaply as possible for them. That's what they're interested in.
Yeah. You know what? We have different interests.
Yeah.
I want to work. I'll work as hard as you want me to, but pay me and give me the benefits that I need to survive.
Unions aren't always the answer. Eastman Kodak, which was in Rochester, New York, was non-union. And they tried to unionize it, and the workers there threw them out. They didn't want them there. They were getting a good wage. They were getting good benefits. The management was treating their workers real good. The trouble with Eastman Kodak is they developed the digital camera, but they didn't
go on with it.
They sat on it. They said, well, this is going to be a threat to our film. Embracing the digital going with it,
They made bad management decisions. It had nothing to do with the labor. They were way ahead of everybody.
Yeah, way ahead. And I had a job offer from Eastman Kodak when I was graduated from Erie Community College. They wined and dined me to come over and work for them. But it was a little conflict called the Vietnam War that kept me going to school. But again, the people, getting off the subject, the people there didn't want a union because they didn't need it. They were making good money. They had good benefits. There was a good relationship between management and the workers there.
Okay, we're talking about the past here, yes.
I'm saying it can exist.
No, that's good.
Without unions, aren't the cure all for everything?
No,
but they are needed in certain. They've definitely brought into play labor laws and stuff like that, where management and factories and industry abused workers terribly.
Even recently, I don't want to be pressured to lose my job to work and not get paid for it. And that's what they were doing to us. So, yes. One of the luxury hotels in Manhattan was non-union, just one. And they paid everybody there, 20 cents an hour more than the union had been negotiated for us. And that's how they kept the union out. And, they had some close votes, but then that's good too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It doesn't matter if they get your wages up, that's not a bad thing.
If people working for any company or business don't want to be unionized because they believe that they're being treated fairly and getting good pay, then they shouldn't be forced to be unionized. If they're happy and they're getting what they want and they have a good standard of living, they have a good job security, a good future, then it should be their choice, whether union or non-union.
Let's cut out this kumbaya stuff here. I build this as a family fight.
Okay.
So I want to talk about the more wacko GOP positions.
Enough of them, yeah.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about impeachment. Let's talk about it's nuts.
Oh yeah, I mean. They're talking right now a lawsuit against Obama.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Impeachment.
Impeachment.
They're doing both,
but I think the lawsuit has more of a chance than impeachment. And it's crazy. Well, they tried to impeach, they actually did impeach Bill Clinton, but they didn't convict him of it or whatever.
If you're a Democrat, and like Mike and I are, you have probably gotten 200 emails collecting money because of the Republican impeachment and suit campaign.
Oh, yeah,
for Democrats, it's like just like money in the bank.
It's candy coming.
It's candy time. It's Christmas.
Yeah, it's the chocolate Easter bunny at Easter.
But it degrades the country to high crimes and misdemeanors. It just doesn't make any sense. And for us, who we're all older folks here, and we grew up with a different Republican Party, I think, than you see now. And impeachment, I can't imagine that,
impeachment should be for something extremely, extremely serious, like a treasonous act or something like that.
Oh, like oral sex. Moving on.
Well, they didn't even convict him of it. Come on, he got away for free.
Well, all right.
Well, look at Hillary. You know what?
No, jeez.
No.
He can't blame him.
You. How about Benghazi?
This is a serious concern.
How about Benghazi? As far as some of us see, the other wacko GOP position. Now, once again, let me answer both sides of this. Well, no, I'm going to say, why all the nonsense about Benghazi?
Well, the way I look at it, no matter if it was a hopeless situation of stopping whoever it was from attacking and killing the ambassador, you go in there and do something about it. You try and send somebody. If they're late, they're late, but you do something. You don't just say, well, they're dead, so what? What difference does it make? It makes a big difference.
But they sent
They're
in
your
people.
People.
They
They're
sent
your
in people,
people
and evacuated them.
Yeah, what? How long after it happened?
Well, you know I think I mean? Fairly quickly they got everybody out. But they didn't. What they didn't do is engage in much of a fight with all these groups. Although they've now arrested what they think the guy fellow they think
is the subject. Should it have happened? Never. It should never have happened. There were warning signs that were ignored by everybody.
But you know there are always warning signs.
Oh yeah, definitely so.
The
definitely
ambassador wanted to go there. He had worked in Benghazi before the revolution.
There's a certain inherent danger in being in a country like that.
You have
to expect the worst and hope for the best.
You know, the Foreign Service people take the same oath as the military, essentially, and they are in harm's way. And whether it's George Bush running the country or Barack Obama, people who work in our embassies and consulates are sometimes attacked, sometimes killed. And it's a dangerous position. We had a very gutsy ambassador who was willing to take chances to try to help that country. And his payment, I'm sorry to say, was that he got killed doing it. But I think that was his choice. He was happy to go there.
And then that becomes a political.
Well, they obviously didn't defend the place well. They didn't figure it out. They didn't.
No. They were in harm's way.
They should have been more protection. Nobody. Yeah. I don't think anybody thinks that that in terms of that they were well protected enough. See, there's always a fight if you meet and talk to diplomats between diplomats because diplomats don't want a bunch of security guys around because they can't talk to anybody and they can't do their diplomacy. And then there's the security guys whose job it is to protect them and they always want to put them in a cocoon.
I think it's got varying degrees as to where the embassy is. Now, obviously, the U.S. embassy in Oslo, Norway, doesn't need quite the protection as the one in Libya. I mean, there's degrees. I mean, so you do have to take into account where the embassy and your personnel are and adjust the security accordingly.
There's been no other topic, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years of the Obama administration bigger than healthcare. Certainly he campaigned on it. That was a rallying cry in 2008. As I pointed out, to jump forward 5 years, Jan Brewer, the Republican governor of Arizona, accepting $1.3 billion from the federal government and thereby ensured 300,000 Arizonans, and the GOP of this state is still trying to sue her over this sensible move. I mean, we're talking about a sensible governor's decision, a good business decision. She had business people. She had captains of Arizona industry. She had CEOs of Arizona's hospitals saying, we're going to go out of business unless we can get paid for the medical services we're giving the less fortunate in Arizona. She go ahead, and the GOP says, no!
But to be fair to Republicans, quite a few of them voted to expand.
Six.
Well, it worked, didn't it? It got expanded.
She made the deal.
I know the Tea Party is after all six of these people who voted to expand Medicaid. But these guys stood up and they voted for it and they went against lots of extreme pressure. And I think they deserve some credit for that.
And I think if you're a Republican out there, support these six guys wherever they are. They're mostly from districts down in the valley. I don't know if they're men or women, but they were brave enough. Yeah. To help out 300,000 of their fellow state people, and their party is going after them tooth and nail. So these are the kinds of extreme GOP positions that drive at least us in Arizona. Now, maybe you Republicans in Western New York are more reasonable because simply because you have this, you know, much higher level of corruption. You're used to such a high level. We're just not used to that level of corruption here.
You've got a got a very high level of corruption in New York State.
It's jaded.
It's a Democratic state. Of course it's corrupt. I got you there.
I lived in New York. Upstate Republicans, come on.
Upstate, yeah, but overall the whole state is Democratic.
But who was more corrupt, the downstate Democrats or the upstate Republicans?
It's a toss-up.
We can count the toss-up.
I'm sorry.
It's embarrassing.
As far as Obamacare goes, it was such a massive bill, pushed through rather quickly, I think, and give an example, when Nancy Pelosi said you have to pass it and then read what's in it. I think that's kind of idiotic. You have to know what's in it before you can vote yes or no on it. And even now, Obama has delayed implementation of certain parts of it for political reasons. If it's the law, it's the law. It should be implemented in full, not, we can't implement this for 2 years like he's been doing. If it's the law, it's the law. If it isn't, it isn't.
8 million Americans, or probably closer to 9 million Americans, are now insured under Obamacare.
20 million people have insurance now that didn't before, I think it is.
Ma'am? Sir?
What? 20 million people got it. Didn't they get insurance?
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but it's beginning to be a higher and higher number. I think it's about 20 million
all
people.
Right.
It may be higher than that, but it's a lot of people have insurance if you count both the Medicare extension.
But
I don't know. You have a president. The president's job is to be the chief executive of the company. And he has a certain amount of leeway. You're giving a Democratic president a lot less leeway in how he manages things than you would a Republican president, right?
I don't know. I think you can throw darts at both of them, Republican and Democratic.
Tell
president.
Me why the GOP, and this is from down at the coffee shop, why do they hate Nancy Pelosi so much? What did this poor little old lady do? Dye her hair?
I don't know. She just
she had the grandkids on the podium.
Doesn't come across as.
At what point did they hate on her so much?
I don't know. Just come across as being too bright. I don't know. But again, I want to let one thing for sure. There is no such thing as free health care. It costs somebody. There's no such thing as free health care.
Oh, that's
got to cost. Somebody has to pay for it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The supporters of Obamacare saying it's free health care. It's not.
Is health care a right or a privilege?
It's not a privilege, or I think it's a combination of both. You need health. You should have good health care in this country.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it.
I want my bus driver to have a sick day once in a while.
Yes. I mean,
I want my airplane pilot.
Healthcare, again, good health care is especially not free. It's very expensive.
Should we give our Republican guests here, we've got 2 minutes, the last word?
Go ahead. Not unless he pays for it. Let's talk about
free speech.
Let's yes, for your donation to Democratic Perspective. This is the first time we tried this, folks, where we actually had the name of the show is Democratic Perspective, and it's that because we don't really give a crap about anybody else's perspective. We present our own. But we thought we would try to see how it went, having a little bit of a dialogue here.
I've told Mike that we get along so well on these subjects because we are in agreement on more points than most people think. The final point.
How
we get there is where we differ. Mike and I have a good relationship, and we could talk like this and not be at each other's throats over it, like other members of the family who Mike is not allowed to talk at all to, because it gets a little bit testy.
Yeah.
But again, we agree on the end results a lot more than people think. It's just the road to get there.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different.
And that is true. Part of that, I think, is fueled by our taste in liquor. We tend to follow.
Yes.
On that high note.
Yes. And we will discuss further this a little later on this evening over a nice glass of scotch on the rocks.
There you go.
And
then a little
further
bourbon.
Solve the problems of this great country.
Bourbon chaser. Yeah, more people need to.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Yeah, it's Chuck an unusual McCann, show today.
It's been a privilege to be here. And next time I come here, I want to see my photograph that I gave you of Rush Limbaugh on the wall.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.